Hello, welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cavallo. I have with me today Dr. Jarrett Patton. Dr. Jarrett is an author, a contributor over at Kevin MD, and a coach and consultant at his own practice. Jarrett, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being here. You have quite the story that I can't wait to share with my audience. Before we get into that, can we talk a little bit about your background and why you got into medicine?
Yes. Since I was in high school, I always wanted to become a physician. I knew that I liked science. I knew that I liked helping people. As a result, it seemed like medicine would be the perfect fit. So I studied hard in high school. I ended up getting a full scholarship academically at Xavier University of Louisiana. And that university is particularly well known for placing the largest amount of African American students into medical school. So I went on to study chemistry there in their pre-med department and continued to study hard on my way to medical school. After I graduated Xavier, I attended Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland. And it was at that point I started to learn a little bit more about the practice of medicine and having a wide exposure to all types of disciplines within medicine. One of the things that drew me into pediatrics was the relationships that I would have with some of the children. Although children tended to be sick and it was sad, many children would get better quickly. And I thought that was just a wonderful occupation to be able to help children and shape their lives so they could go on and have a healthier time in the future. I had the chance to go to Ghana in West Africa and have an international health elective for about 6 weeks. And it was there that my eyes were open to all the fortunes we have in the United States with technology, with advanced hospital systems, with testing, with insurance. And I saw in a country working in a small village outside of Kumasi that many places in the world did not have those luxuries. So I would see many children come in and get sick, and there were some that could be treated and some that couldn't. But children tended to be resilient beings, and that's where my decision was finally made to enter pediatrics.
Was it difficult coming from the United States where, as you said earlier, you were getting these positive outcomes with the children? Was there a greater degree of difficulty with some of the cases you saw in Ghana?
There absolutely was, due to the geographic isolation of the medical center I was in. The medical center was set up much like a one-level house here in the U.S., and there was a kitchen where people would prepare food. There were several patient rooms that were in a longer hallway, and then there was an area to see outpatients. During my time, one of the physicians who was an internal medicine physician but also had some surgical training had a surgical emergency, and he looked at me and said, "Well, you're a U.S. medical student, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Well, you can be my anesthesiologist today." Needless to say, I took a pause. I had no way of knowing what to say or do other than I've never done anything like that. He said, "No, that's okay. In this case, you can take this syringe and slowly press it in his veins until he stops screaming. And if he starts falling asleep or stops breathing, then stop pushing the medication." And that was my only instruction. And really, being a U.S. medical student where in some cases you barely got to touch a patient, I was extremely nervous during that time and had the opportunity to help someone who had a severe medical emergency. The patient actually did have his pain relatively well controlled and did fine after the surgery. So that was just one of those moments that I just couldn't see coming, but did shape my career.
Wow. So when you came back to the States and you settled down for your practice, you started to work in Pennsylvania, correct?
Yes. After I attended my residency in NYU in Bellevue in New York City, I came out to Eastern Pennsylvania where I was a general pediatrician. I wanted to take on a practice that gave me the opportunity to really serve the underserved, those children that may not be able to afford healthcare or have insurance to get health care, but needed a good physician. I felt especially moved to work in an urban area because as a black male, I did not have any black physician role models growing up. And just having my face in the community was also something that motivated me to stay within urban communities.
In addition to helping out there, you quickly rose through the ranks into hospital administration as well, correct?
Yes, over the time, I was highly skilled at being a pediatrician, and my leadership capability started to shine through. I was recruited to become a medical director at a general pediatric practice that was hospital-based. That had me overseeing several physicians and several nurse practitioners, and we collectively saw thousands and thousands of patients every year. With time, my leadership skills expanded so that I took on a role as division chief over the entire pediatric department. And I also ultimately rose to the ranks of president of the medical staff. And this was the president of the medical staff over an 8-hospital system, including over 1,200 doctors, 600 advanced practice clinicians, and 8 hospitals.
Now, even though you rose to the ranks of being the president of this hospital association, it didn't stop you from patient care.
No, all throughout my time, I was still dedicated to my mission of taking care of children in a pediatric setting that would accept people regardless of the ability to pay.
So how did you do it? How did you be the president and continue clinical practice? That seems like a lot of hats to wear.
It was. Over the time, I seemed like I just kept adding hats, and it seemed like they were stacked up. But my mission to serve, my mission to improve healthcare really kept me going through all of it. I had a lot of great physicians that I worked alongside with, and they helped me help follow some of my patients when I was at another hospital, perhaps in a meeting, or perhaps doing some other administrative task. So it really took a great team, and I certainly worked with a great team.
And so this is all going to your goals as being not only a clinical, but a community leader. How did you decide to transition away from the hospital space to your own personal consulting and coaching practice?
Well, that's quite an interesting story, because being a successful pediatrician, being a senior physician executive over a hospital network, I felt like I was rising toward the top of my career. And this happened until one day, one of my standing meetings with one of the hospital attorneys, wasn't thinking too much of it. He met in my office at the time and asked me, do I know this woman? He showed me a picture of a woman, and I didn't know who she was. He showed me another picture, and I said, well, maybe vaguely, I'm just not sure. He paused and went on to tell me that, I'm sorry to tell you this, but you're under investigation. I was shocked. I felt drawn because I had no idea what the situation was going to be and why I was under investigation. He proceeded to tell me that the woman claimed that I was inappropriate with her during an exam of her 9-month-old child. I was in shock. I was removed. I felt like I was in a vacuum at that time. It ultimately ended up being that I was placed on a leave and relieved of my duties while they tried to sort some things out. They ultimately did meet with the woman, and at that point, the woman said that she was going to the police with her complaint. So I was nervous when I went to meet with the chief medical officer and was told to leave the hospital grounds. I felt rejected. I felt alone. I felt like I had no support. And ultimately, time went on, and it was probably 6 or 7 weeks before I heard anything else. And it was at that time my attorney called me and said the police wanted me to turn myself in at 2 o'clock. So again, I'm shocked because, well, from any story I've seen, I was expecting at least to be interviewed or talked to by the police. And it went straight to this. And well, I said, that's what it means. I still remember arriving at the police station when the officer came to get me and putting those cold steel handcuffs on my wrist extremely tightly as he put me in the back of a paddy wagon where I could see the smears of blood on the wall and the foul odor that was within that paddy wagon. As I was strapped in and being transported to the jail, I knew why someone like Freddie Gray in Baltimore was perhaps injured and killed in a paddy wagon, because it's extremely difficult to keep your balance and keep yourself upright when you are handcuffed. However, they took me into the jail and they began my processing. And I just couldn't believe that after all of this great career, I was sitting in a jail cell with a few other people and looking around the cold walls and looking at the bars and looking at this exposed toilet that was full of garbage and human waste that smelled horrible, that I was in here being charged with indecent assault. So I ultimately made bail and left the jail and went home with comfort from my family and my friends and began the battle of fighting for my rights. The State Board of Medicine revoked my license in Pennsylvania, which triggered suspension of my license in New York, which triggered the revocation of my DEA license, which triggered a revocation of my American Board pediatric certification. So I was fighting all these battles, including the criminal charges at one time, and there were times I felt overwhelmed. I felt rejected. I felt like I was all alone, even though I had the best support of my wife and my family and friends around me. Part of me was naive in thinking that this will be over quickly and I'll be able to run up and regain myself, prove my innocence, and get back to the job that I had. But there was delay after delay after delay in my case, and months went by, which ultimately I lost my job at the hospital. And it was sometime around December, which was about 8 months or so after the initial charge. It was around that time when the judge, something happened with the prosecution, and it made the trial have to be rescheduled until April. And it was at that time I said, I have to do something. I was looking for employment. I even went to go get my commercial driver's license, but because I had charges over me, I was untouchable. So I knew at this point I would have to do something for myself. And that's what led me to begin Dr. Jarrett, my PLLC, in which I coach physicians who have found themselves in some sort of trouble, either with medical boards, either with state licensing boards, with hospitals, because a lot of times physicians, when they are in those positions, they are cast away like garbage. They are felt to be not useful anymore. They are expendable. And I had gone through all of those feelings myself personally. And as I did more research on my time fighting these charges, I realized that I could help people just like me, because there was no one out here who was trying to coach physicians who were in these tough situations. Physician coaching industry typically focuses on the previous me, the physician executive headed toward the top and coaching them with better leadership skills. They don't focus on those that are seen rejected or cast away.
It's amazing to me that while you're going through this, you have the stress and the strain of this trial and your freedom hanging in the balance. And yet you're trying to figure out, how can I use this as a positive thing? How could I take this situation and make others better with it? Now, during this time, do I understand right that some others came forward as well to bring charges?
There were other women who made similar complaints during this time that I had maybe seen 7 or 8 years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and they claimed that the same thing happened to them. So I was fighting all of these things. Although it didn't result in additional charges, it resulted in additional stress, because now there were more stories that had to be heard and more press negatively against me. And it certainly had its toll on me as an individual, my wife, my family, my children, financially, mentally, you name it. It was a tremendous stress. But I knew in order to keep us all together, I had to stand up and rise above all the noise to try to make sure what would happen would be the right thing.
So, Dr. Jarrett, when was all this going on? Is this a recent event?
Yes. This all started to occur based on a office visit in February 2016. It went throughout the rest of 2016, well into 2017. It was in February of 2017 when Pennsylvania decided they would give my license back, which prompted New York to give me my license back, which I was then able to apply for my DEA license and got that back sometime in March or April of 2017, and ultimately kept my pediatric board certification as everything else was restored. However, my trial did not occur until the end of June in 2017.
So let me get this straight. You got your license back even with this trial and these allegations going on.
That is correct. I ended up getting a letter in the mail, and I got very close with my mail carrier. She was constantly delivering me certified mail from all types of places. But one day she brought me a certified letter I signed for, and it essentially said I can reapply for my Pennsylvania license.
And you know, it was when I was doing my research coming into this interview, I noticed that you had mentioned earlier that there had been some negative press. And as this year progressed, as you read the stories, the press coverage of this started to shift. And much like the medical board, it seemed like the coverage started to become positive towards you and your experience.
I would agree. I think part of it is how I was feeling in regards to becoming a stronger individual through prayer and my faith and being able to ignore the background noise of news stories and newspaper articles. However, it did seem that there was a lot less media attention drawn to my case after some time. So I know that there were some reporters in virtually every one of my hearings, so they were privy to quite a bit of information that may not have necessarily made it into trial.
And could you tell us a little bit about June 29th of 2017?
So that is the week of my trial. And with all the testimony, it was very clear to the jury of my peers that I truly was innocent. Although the system treated me as I was guilty, ultimately my innocence prevailed. And as I was waiting for the verdict, it was a couple hours that seemed like an eternity to me. As I was waiting in the hallway, listening to heels echo across the floors of the hard surface of and the kind of sterile environment of a courthouse. And when the jury returned and handed over the verdict, that simple passage of that piece of paper to three or four different people before it was read seemed like it took an hour. But finally, the envelope was opened. I was said to be not guilty, and I was able to take a big exhale.
In reading it, obviously I wasn't there. It seemed like there was more than a big exhale. It seemed like, you know, there was an explosion of emotion from your family. And then you said a quote to the reporter that I found very interesting. Do you recall what that quote was?
Yes, I quoted a couple of things, and first, I'll go to my emotion at that time. I felt tears just streaming down my face after the verdict was read. I felt an overwhelming sense of relief, but at the same time, anger. And it was mixed in with some jubilation. And I was so caught up in my own feelings, I could barely hear my supporters that were friends or patients, mothers of my patients, fellow physicians that were in the audience. I couldn't hear the cheers and all the fanfare that was going on with them at the time. So it really was an incredible amount of emotion going on at the time. So I said a couple of things in my quote. One was a relationship to Emmett Till, which was a situation that happened in Mississippi in the 1950s. And Emmett Till was a teenage boy who was murdered by street justice after it was alleged that he whistled or made a comment to a white woman. So as a black male in Mississippi in the 1950s, he was immediately executed by mob justice. That really resonated with me because I felt that I was in the same predicament over this entire time. However, the final piece of the quote that I gave that reporter that day was really, at the end of the day, I would rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. And Emmett Till unfortunately lost his life, but the jury of 12 has given me the chance to go on to do better things.
It's so inspiring to me that through all that happened to you, you never lost faith in humanity, that you believed so much in your innocence that you would put your fate in the hands of 12 people. Did you ever have any reservations about that?
I was nervous throughout the entire process because I know that as a black person in the criminal justice system, you already have some strikes against you regardless of what the facts were about the cases. And sitting in courtrooms watching the fate of many people of color being determined who may not have had a lot of representation or didn't quite understand the process of court and being sentenced or convicted while I was waiting for some of my hearings made me extremely nervous about our justice system.
You said something earlier, which was really powerful, that, you know, you've gone through this situation and you saw how the system treated you. You're using this experience to help others. So what is next for Dr. Jarrett?
Well, I am Dr. Jarrett. I am a board certified pediatrician, and I haven't lost my dedication to pediatrics, which is why I continue to help parents, mothers and fathers help transform their relationship with their children through books, through live streaming, and through my programs I will have forthcoming to help take better care of their children. So for all the parents out there, you can follow me on my Facebook page, Dr. Jarrett. You spell out Dr. J-A-2-R-E-1-T. So I'm there every week live streaming to answer questions or discuss topics of pediatric interest. So I'm still here to help you parents out, regardless if I'm not currently practicing in an office environment. Additionally, I am a former medical staff president who oversaw over 1,200 doctors and ultimately fell from grace within an 8 hospital system. But I'm still here to help those physicians out there that may have fallen from grace or been casted aside, because I know there is a plan for you. You have not lost all that education and hard work that you put into yourselves. So visit my webpage at www.drjarrett.com and set up a 30-minute exploratory session with me about my coaching opportunities, because I'm here to help you.
And it's so great to have these kind of resources. We will make sure that we share all these links on our podcast notes. So if you're tuning into this broadcast, please make sure to read the podcast notes and you'll have links to all of Dr. Jarrett's sites. So as we start to wrap this up, do you have any closing thoughts?
Well, my closing thoughts are that as tragic as this story is, I'm truly grateful that God had given me the strength to get through this situation and continues to guide me into what I'm doing next, which includes being on this very podcast. So I'm grateful for you today, Matt, for using your valuable medium to tell some of my story. Also, I'm grateful to the support of my wife, Demary, and all of my children, including my extended family, my parents, as well as all of my friends that stood by my side throughout this entire ordeal because they knew it was ridiculous.
Well, Dr. Jarrett, we can't thank you enough for joining the podcast today and sharing with us such a personal, moving story. I truly believe that you're going to help so many people by sharing your story. And thank you so much for having the courage to do that with us here today.
Thank you, Matt, for having me. I certainly, it's a tough story for me to tell, but it's a story that needs to be heard. Thank you.
He's Dr. Jarrett Patton. I'm Matt Cavallo. Thank you so much for tuning in to this podcast of the Patient Activation Network. We will bring you another inspiring story soon.